This is a production of Cornell University.
So the time is now 12:15. I'm going to call this meeting to order. I'm going to ask our clerk to do roll call for today.
Susan Berry. Joseph Canella. Marin Cherry. Jackie Creepy. Hey DePew. Jamie Duong.
He's here.
I'm here.
Brenda Fisher. Brandon Fortenberry. Brian Goodell. Andrea Hinman-Mott.
Here.
Deborah Howell. Emily Ivory.
I'm here.
Rigel Lochner.
Here.
Karen Laparco. Christine Mahoney.
Here.
Virginia McGowley.
Hi.
Jen Michael.
I'm here.
Ashley Miller. Ellen Miller. Mary Newhart.
She was just in.
Michelle Podola. Nasser Saida. Kate Supron. Kit Tannenbaum.
Here.
Laura Taylor. Jessica Townley. Jessica Withers.
Here.
Lisa Zacharias.
All right, thank you for roll call. I'd like to now go on to the approval of minutes from March 3rd, 2020. Do I have a motion to approve the March 3rd minutes?
I'll move to approve them.
Thank you. Do I have a second to approve the March 3rd minutes?
I'll second.
Thank you. By unanimous, is there any objection to the March 3rd approval of the March 3rd minutes? Seeing none, the March 3rd minutes are approved. Let's move on to approval of the March 17th 2021 minutes. Do I get a motion to approve those minutes? And we're going to do this by unanimous consent.
I'll move to approve those as well.
Thank you. Do I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to approve the March 17th minutes and move on to business of the day. As I've reiterated in the past, according to the Employee Assembly Priorities Poll, diversity, equity, and inclusion campus climate is the number two priority that staff members have indicated to us is of importance. And as we've done, you know, research and discussions with different units across campus, some light has been shed upon the LGBTQ community, in that I believe the trans community have indicated less sense of belonging. And I think that it's important for us to have conversations with different diverse groups across campus to talk about their experience and discuss, you know, ways in which we can either help partner or any collaborations that we can sort of undertake to improve the sense of belonging for the LGBTQ community, or if there's anything that we can do to support any existing efforts. So I want to provide the floor to Sue Brightly and Anthony Assis. I'm not sure if I see Anthony Assis, but I do see Sue Brightly here for their CNG presentation.
Well, first of all, thanks, Kay and the Assembly, for having us here. And I'll also include Joe Canella, who also is one of our CNG board members. And I'm hoping Anthony is going to show up. I know that they're super busy right now with the summit. So hopefully they'll be able to show up. I guess I just figured I would run through some of the things that RCNG does and has been doing over the past year. I think you all are pretty familiar with what the CNGs, the intention around the colleague network groups is and the mission, or do you need a little background on that?
I think some background would be helpful.
Sure. Well, there are six colleague network groups, and they're managed and sponsored by the Department of Inclusion and Workforce Diversity. In each CNG has its own board of employees. I'm trying to remember what all six are. We have one for men of color, women of color, disabilities, LGBTQ, and
veterans.
Anyway, so there's basically four, it's built on this thing called the Gear Up model is what the CNGs follow. And that's giving, it's like the pillars of what we do. It's giving, so volunteering and mentoring, engaging different opportunities to network and increase a sense of belonging at Cornell. Achieving, so advocating for our membership, and recruiting and mentoring. So in our particular LGBTQ plus CNG, we mainly what we've been doing is we meet like every month. We have about 150 members on our mailing list. And we, in the past year, well, previous to pandemic, we did, we had the lunches, we would invite speakers. We've tried to continue that in a virtual mode with monthly lunchtime meetings. We invite speakers. We try to build community. The things that we're really trying to work on for this year is sustain a sense of community, because a lot of people in our LGBTQ plus community already feel a sense of isolation and disconnect. So really trying to provide a safe place and build the bonds and community to help support a sense of belonging is what we've been focused on, especially in the past year. I made some notes. I just want to go through. We did a survey last year of our members and wanted to find out, you know, what our membership really wanted to focus on. And it seemed like the feedback that we got was more socializing, information sharing. Self-care came up a lot. So we've been trying to put together events where we've had speakers that came from Cornell Wellness and Cornell Health to help talk about issues that we're dealing with. I think that's sort of in a nutshell. Joe, is there anything I'm missing here?
In my short tenure on both the EA and on the board of the Colleague Network Group, we're focusing on trying to expand our reach, not make it just LGBTQ plus only, because you don't have to identify as such in order to be part of the CNG. So we're trying to reach out to allies as well. In addition to that, we also have a community service aspect. It was, Sue, help me remember, socks and underwear for a homeless shelter that we...
For homeless youth, yeah, that was our activity for last year. We were able to donate over 400 articles of clothing, and that was university-wide. There were boxes set up.
So again, we're trying to expand our reach and our outreach. I think Sue and I are here. I'm taking my EA hat off for a second. I think Sue and I are here to ask, how can we support the EA's work around the issue of belonging and feeling that sense of belonging, especially with our trans community? And then, is there anything specific other than that that we can partner with in order to make both the EA and the CNG stronger entities?
I would like to just say, as the chair for communications, that I'm happy if you, I know you mentioned you sometimes have guest speakers at your meetings. I know you have like a social hour. Is it twice a month or once a month? That you have a social hour gathering. If you have any events or activities that you would like us to help promote, I can certainly do that. We have a monthly newsletter that we put out. We have our social media channels. So I'm more than happy to help with communications in that way, if there's anything that we can help in that sense. I also wanted to say a personal note. I did recently sign up for your newsletter, and I never received, like, I signed up through the CNG website, mm-hmm. and you get like the option to check all of the boxes for like the different groups you're interested in joining. And I did that, but then I never received any follow-up or future communication. So I just mm-hmm. wanted to mention that.
When did you do that? I did that recently,
within the last month.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah, because that's handled through the DIWD. And I know that they've got a lot of stuff going on right now, personnel changes and stuff. So I'm going to look into that and find out, because obviously that's not something that we want to have happen.
I think that would be an action item for Sue and I to circle back with Anthony and see where that stands. We're also trying to partner with the LGBTRC, the Resource Center. It's primarily geared towards students, but they have a staff newsletter as well. So we're in touch with staff there, and they're helping us promote. But Ellen, I think if we could get your help, that would make it all the better. You know, not only in terms of getting the word out, but, you know, here are the upcoming events. And then, you know, I don't know if there's enough content for this, but feature colleague network groups updates every month if EA puts out a monthly newsletter, for example.
That's a great idea, a way to try to keep employees aware that the CNGs are out there. Because one of the things that we kind of battle is that people don't even know that the CNGs exist.
Fortunately, they're buried pretty deeply on the HR website. And there's lots of clicks that it takes to get to that.
No, that got fixed.
That got fixed. All right.
Finally got fixed, yeah.
It's something else that I've learned, mostly from my involvement with the Employee Assembly and our connection with the colleague network groups, is that all of the colleague network groups are open to all employees. Because when I first heard about the colleague network groups, I was like, I don't think I really fit in any of these groups. Like, I don't think I'm considered a young professional anymore. Like, that ship has sailed. I'm no longer young. I'm not, you know, I don't fit into the biopic, you know, category. I don't fit into the LGBTQ. So I felt like I, you know, these colleague network groups aren't for me. But then I learned, you know, over over the last 2 years and over time and working with you and meeting you all, that they are for everyone. So I am excited to become more involved in the different colleague network groups and to help with promotions and to help get involved with your mission. And so I think it's important for everyone to know that they're all open for everyone.
That's super. Sue, when is the Did You Know session?
Yeah, is this Friday?
Okay, so this Friday we have a Did You Know session, and I think it would be perfect timing for Did You Know that you don't have to identify as LGBTQ+ or as any of the groups that sound like niche groups. You don't have any, they're all open to everyone.
Thank you, Sue, Joe. I want to open up the floor for any additional questions or comments. I think there's definitely an opportunity to use our resources, our newsletter, any channels that we have with communications to get the word out and to increase your allyship, especially as you mentioned, the LGBTQ CNG isn't just maybe for people who identify, you know, as LGBTQ, but really for people who also want to just maybe support, you know, your efforts. So I think there's definitely a future collaboration there as well. So I want to ask if anybody has any questions or comments, please raise your hand using either the raise your hand functionality or physically raise your hand and I'll call on you. So Beth Corson.
Hey, thank you. Just quickly, I was wondering, I know you've done some series before, like, I don't remember if they're called town halls or, but where the EA is, you know, creating these opportunities to get information out to staff and hear from folks around campus. And I'm wondering if there, it might be possible in the future to do one that highlights all of our CNGs and kind of promoting the fact that they're open to everyone and how to get involved, just to kind of get all that information out there and let the folks heading those up speak to what they do.
I think that's, I mean, I don't want to speak for Sue, but I think that's a fabulous idea.
Thank you.
A one CNG is featured more than another.
I wish Anthony was here though, because I do know part of, I'm not sure how open to everyone the CNGs are. And historically, like with the LGBTQ+ colleague network group, you know, some people aren't out or are questioning. They may not be comfortable possibly being out with their colleagues. And so part of what the CNGs do is provide a safe space. I can only speak for the LGBTQ CNG, but I know that that is part of what we're doing. And I know we want to build relationships with allies. And that is one of the things we're working on this year. There's a going, we're actually really excited. There's a collaboration with eCornell that we're going to have specifically to celebrate the LGBTQ community during Pride Month, during June. And that's gonna be really cool. But Anthony and the DIWD folks, I'm not sure exactly how the parameters are. So I just wanna kind of put in that corollary.
So, Sue, it sounds as if that would be something that we have to take to the board as a whole.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
with the DIWD, which, of course, there's a lot of transition going on right now. Yes. So
great. Let's table that idea. I see some hands are raised, so I do want to provide some time for some other people. I know Reginald's hand is raised, and then Ellen, so I want to recognize Reginald.
Yeah, so... thank you, Sue, for mentioning that. I think I'm the chair of the Men of Color and a colleague network group. And so we're this idea that, you know, we're there's the tension between, on the one hand, we certainly want to welcome allies and we want people to understand sort of what our experience is, but we also want to create a safe space. So I think it's a conversation that we need to have within our groups and then come back to the EA and other groups around how, what is broader involvement really look like?
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Reginald. That's a great point.
I'm going to recognize Ellen.
Yeah, I just want to say like that makes complete sense. I think that the idea of having a staff forum on the CNGs does highlight them and the work that they do and allows people of those specific communities to be aware of the groups who may not be aware of them as well. So I do think that I do like the idea of a staff forum. I think it would be, like you said, just determining how much information you want to share, how open you want to make that enrollment or that involvement. But I think just getting the information out there to the entire staff body could be helpful.
Absolutely.
Any other commentary, questions? All right, Sue, Joe, I'm sorry, I think I cut you off a little bit early. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
I just like Beth's idea a lot, and I think I support Kit's point and Reginald's point about a staff forum for all the CNGs. I think that's a way that we can promote awareness without necessarily, violating someone's privacy if, as Sue mentioned, they're not comfortable. That having been said, is there anything that the EA has as a priority that we can help you with, we being the LGBTQ+ CNG? I know there's the belonging at Cornell data that's out there. But is there another partnership to be had?
Joe, I think that you bring up a really good question. I wish, is Brian Goodell here or Christy Mahoney? I know that diversity is a part of the welfare committee's charge. I don't know if there are any initiatives that are going through those committees that we could partner with the CNGs on. So I'll open the floor maybe for Christy to comment on this.
So we have representation on our committee by Joe, by Andrea, by Veterans Lead is
Deborah Howell.
Deborah. And we regularly ask the question about how should we be partnering and are there initiatives going on in any of those groups that we could be a better supporter of? Or I think that question is always there. And I would encourage the representatives to bring any issues forward that way. I do know that we are having Ruth, Linda Kroll Howell return to discuss further the data. And Joe, please help us with that agenda. And if we want to extend an invitation into any of the CNG leadership or membership more broadly for those presentations, I think we could.
Thank you, Christy. I think just having you both here and then having that representation from Joe and being able to share information and resources, I think will be pretty important. The same way we can, have the newsletter be a conduit for information for the LGBTQ, meetings and presentations. I think there's also an opportunity if we had, any either staff forums or any other, events coming up, I'd hope that we could also partner with you all to use your
your maybe listserv to sort of share that information and disseminate it as well. And if there are any issues that you have, then I think, you know, the EA is a good place to kind of work through and partner to discuss some of those issues. I know Joe and myself had something that we're working on in regards to the EEO statement that we had resolved through Angela Winfield. So I think there's definitely opportunities for collaboration and partnership on either working through issues or getting messaging out. Andrea, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a twofold response that we certainly can have, again, representing the disability aspect of things. I think there's the conversation about a forum specifically just discussing, because again, the same disclosure issue that we talk about from LGBT plus is the same for disability and not obvious disabilities and people not necessarily wanting to disclose elements that aren't necessarily applicable for the conversation and sort of whatever space that we create. Obviously, we welcome allies within that, but it's a different conversation. And I can understand the perspectives that Reginald's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the form is one component, but if we're talking about other initiatives, certainly working through the Employee Welfare Committee, Christy and I've talked about other initiatives and things that we're working on. And I think that sort of comes from the awareness that a forum can build. And I think it's an ongoing discussion. It's not an initiative that it's like, okay, we've accomplished that. I think it's an ongoing conversation that we should blend into everything that we do so that we're making sure that we're inclusive within the aspects of that. So that's the only sort of caveat that I want to talk about. We certainly talk about initiatives and things that we can do, but I think it's an ongoing conversation of inclusion throughout all of the projects and initiatives that are happening within the EA.
Thank you. Joe?
Andrea, I think that's a great point. When I first had conversations with Christopher Luan from the LGBT Resource Center on campus, he said he would welcome the presence of staff, whether they identify or not as part of the community, helping out with events like Lavender graduation, for example. Staff presence there would communicate to students, we support you. So that's something that we could consider, and that was actually his idea.
Thank you, Joe. Any other comments, feedback? Seeing none, I want to thank Joe and Sue both for being here and presenting. I think, as Andrea mentioned, this is, I think, going to be an ongoing conversation, and I definitely welcome you all to continue participating. The Employee Assembly meetings are open to, you know, the Cornell public, to people who want to join in and really continue this. And I think the channel of communication is open if you want to share resources. So I want to thank you both for your time, and I welcome you to continue staying on this meeting if you have the time, and feel free to participate as you see fit. So moving on to the next business of the day, I wanted to give an update. I sent everyone an email after the March 16th Atlanta shootings to talk about, you know, not just the shooting, but also the rise in anti-Asian violence and hate crime that we've seen across this country. I think as an Asian American myself, I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about it and kind of share that I think it is a very difficult time to sort of see the hostility grow and the xenophobia and the racism towards the Asian community. And I think from this, we've had the executive committee has had conversations with the Asian and Asian American Center to talk about ways that we can partner. There have been ongoing discussions that I've had with the Ithaca Asian American Association to talk about ways in which we can either share stories, share information, and what are some things that they would like to see and what are some things that they've been hearing. And these conversations have been very productive. And we've actually connected some individuals from these organizations with Anthony Siss, who runs the Inclusive Excellence podcast series. He's done, I think, Being Black at Blackness at Cornell series, which has been really great. And I encourage you all to listen. And he's definitely, him and Toral Patel have agreed to host a Being Asian at Cornell series. So there's been conversations surrounding that, and I'm hoping that we'll hopefully get something out by Asian and Pacific Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month, which is in May. And also there's been conversation with the Asian and Asian American Center about perhaps a staff forum to kind of discuss some of these anti-Asian, the history of anti-Asian violence in this country, and state some facts about the growing amount of cases that we've seen recently, and maybe take questions and maybe hear from community members to shed some light on some of the things that have been happening. So I want to kind of also open up the floor for discussion on this. I want to hear from you all and get your thoughts on either some of the things that I've just discussed, or if you have any questions, I want to just open the floor for this conversation. So feel free to raise your hands and I'll call on you for this discussion. Seeing no hands raised, I will keep you all posted as this progresses. Let me know if you have any questions. Reginald?
Yeah, I just want to say that I think it's a great idea, right? I think we need to be in support of all the members of our community and find ways to help the community understand the implications of the things that happen nationally, but also the things that happen locally to the members of our community.
Thank you, Reginald. Any other comments? Thank you, Nasser. I think that captures it all. I guess seeing no other comments or questions, I'm going to move on to committee reports. So the executive committee, usually Michelle Loparco provides the executive committee report, but she's not here today. So a lot of what we've been working on have been discussions with the Asian and Asian American Center, talking about potential partnerships. We've also still been in touch with Joanne DiStefano's office for a finance staff forum so that we can have Paul Streeter and Joanne DiStefano discuss the budget and then perhaps talk about the future of fiscal year 22. I know that in the recent staff forum with President Pollack, there was discussion about SIP and hiring freezes. So I'd like to get some more information on that and see how COVID has impacted the fiscal 21 year budget and then what it might look like moving forward into fiscal year 22. So we have not heard back from Joanne DiStefano, but I would like to get that on the calendar. And it sounds like in terms of staff forums, there will be a future discussion on a CNG staff forum to just get information out and maybe route people to the resources and individuals, have individuals sort of get more information on these CNGs, because they are, I think, a great resource for staff of you know, these identities. So I think there'll be more discussion on that moving forward. And I think we're ramping up for elections. I think that's going to be pretty important. I know Nasser sent out an email recently, and I think he brought up some really good points in terms of, you know, how do we ensure that staff broadly have a good sense of what the employee assembly does? You know, what is our charter? What is our charge? You know, what we have the power to do, what we have been doing. I think being on the employee assembly and having been on employee assembly for several years, I think to me, it's very clear, but I think that's just my perspective. So it'd be interesting to kind of maybe to talk in the executive committee about ways in which we can address some of those concerns that Nasser brought up that are really valid. And so that is the executive committee report. I want to move on to the communications and awards committee. Ellen? Oh, wait, hold on. Before we move on to Ellen, are there any questions, any comments, any suggestions? I'm looking for any hands raised. Seeing none, I'm going to forward the floor to Ellen.
Hello. I will start with awards and recognition. The George Peter Award is still open. We extended the nomination period through April 16th. So far, we've received about 16 or 17 nominations, which I think is a great turnout. And just doing a very quick overview of them, I think that they're all very strong applications. So it's going to be a tough decision to make, but I'm very happy and very proud that the EA can recognize an employee in that way. So I'm happy about that. I also am happy to say that along with the George Peter Award, we were able to secure some prizes that go along with that. So the winner of the award will receive a $100 gift certificate to the Cornell store. They will also receive a gift certificate for an overnight stay with breakfast at the Statler Hotel. And they will receive a package of one-on-one mindfulness sessions with Cornell Wellness. So that's pretty exciting. And let's see. We are in the final stages of the revamp for the Not Opperman Award, which for some reason, don't have it in my notes, the new name. I don't know if Fran, you want to jump in. I want to say it's the Award for Integrity and Inclusion. Something very similar to that. Brandon, feel free to jump in if you want. But we're on the final stages of revamping the new criterion overview for that, and we'll hopefully be able to present that at the next EA meeting. And we've been talking a lot about the appreciation portal still, and just want to encourage employees to use that all the time, like whenever possible. It's free to use. There doesn't have to be points that go along with it. And it's always nice to get, that little bit of recognition from a colleague in your email box. Then moving on to communications, we have our next EA Voice newsletter scheduled to publish on Monday. And we have a pretty full content list for that. We do plan to do some highlighting of the colleague network groups that have visited us in the last two meetings. And we are going to also be highlighting Sustainability Month, which is this month, April. And I don't have the full list in front of me, but we have quite a full list. So that's coming soon. What else? And we've been working with the Elections Committee on promotions for the elections. There was a plan for a Meet the Candidates forum, which I believe has been tabled at this time. That's pretty much the summary for now. I mean, we're going strong as always. And as always, please feel free to reach out to me if there's anything that I can help with on the promotion side or for the newsletter or any ideas that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. I see Joe's hand is raised. Joe?
I just have a quick question. Do we have a tentative schedule of at what point we will have invited and heard from all of the CNGs? And would there be advantage to highlighting all of the CNGs at once in a newsletter as opposed to some here and then some later?
Yeah, I think Jamie was handling the communication with the CNGs as far as scheduling them for meetings. I believe that all of the CNGs were, that we did reach out to all of them and everyone who wanted to present as at this point. I'm not sure if that's true or not. Jamie, if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, it's not quite 100% accurate. I haven't reached out to all the CNGs yet. We were running out of days sort of because our term is coming pretty much to an end. But I definitely think that that outreach would be a very good thing to kick off the next EA session once we get done with the elections and all that.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, we did highlight the Veterans CNG previously because they presented at the Welfare Committee. So I was planning on just doing a little highlight on the disability and the LGBTQ. But if you think it's better to wait and do a bigger feature later, that's certainly an option to consider. So if you want to touch base with me after the meeting, we can discuss that further. Thank you, Joe, for the suggestion.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for Ellen? See no hands raised. I'm going to move on to the Education Committee. Jessica?
Just a brief one. I see Claire is here, so if she wants to say anything more, but just an update. Last time I had said that CLASP would be presenting to the student assembly within a couple of weeks. They've decided to present in the fall instead. So I have nothing, you know, there's nothing to share there. No meeting invites or anything. And Claire and I will both make sure that this information passes on to our successors.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions, Claire?
Just like quickly add on. CLASP said they're working on like post-pandemic plans right now. So they will hopefully be presenting in the fall. And student assembly is also holding elections right now. So depending on those go, either me or my successor will keep you updated and keep in contact with CLASP.
Thank you, Claire. Any questions for the Education Committee? Seeing no hands raised, let's move on to the Welfare Committee. Chrissy Mahoney.
Hello. So we've been continuing our discussions on hybrid work approach and concerns that have been raised and brought forward to the committee, as well as seeking follow-up from the Belonging at Cornell survey. Inviting Linda Krollhow to a future meeting. We are in partnership with both work life and wellness, kind of the brainstorming opportunity for them on certain programming ideas. So there'll be a few announcements that come out over the next week to 2 weeks about events, one being an remembrance event that's coming up soon, another being the Inclusion Summit, Inclusion Excellence Summit, which is later in the month. Additionally, there's May spring programming from wellness that focuses on mental health and movement as a manner for wellness. So you'll be seeing announcements. We have a partnership. Ellen is very good at picking up those opportunities and sharing it out. I don't know, Jessica, if you wanted to mention again about the mentor program, the virtual mentor program, and then transportation coordinating as a POD distribution site for the vaccine. That is a big deal and will be coming soon. So that's all I have. Jessica, did you want to mention?
Sure. I can just quickly say that we did have a presentation about the virtual mentoring that's available in Workday now, or you at least see info about it. So it is only in Workday. I can't give you a link. Right now it's being tested in 5 units or schools across campus, and then hopefully we'll expand to the whole campus summer or fall. So right now they are encouraging people to sign up to be a mentor. You can be a peer mentor, so don't worry if you feel like you're not high up enough in the hierarchy to be a mentor, you are. And the commitment they're asking for is 2 1-hour meetings over 2 months. So basically 4 hours over 2 months. If you can commit to that, please sign up to be a mentor. I encourage you to do that. And hopefully we'll all see more about it summer or fall.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions about Chrissy's report or the mentorship program? C, Seeing no hands raised, we're going to move on to Benefits and Policy Committee. I don't see Brian here. Is there anybody else on the Benefits and Policy Committee that'd like to give an update?
I don't know that I have an official update, but I don't think that we've met since prior to the last EA general meeting, because I think Brian is on leave right now for FMLA.
Thank you, Kit. So let's move on to the Elections Committee. Nasser?
Hello, everyone. Nasser here, coming with the Election Committee report. And I do, first and foremost, the primary focal matter I want to do is I just want to thank everyone that's been involved for the weeks and actually really months leading up to our current elections. The Executive Committee and Hey and the others have really been instrumental in supporting bringing their insights and their wisdom and to really guide and answer a lot of the tough questions that we had structurally about how to set up some of the matters in the election. So very grateful for that. Grateful for every single member of the Elections Committee. There was a lot of work that, you know, as you all know, we inherited with the transition, the resolutions from last year to build out a structure and some creativity and some things that were involved in making our tripartite moving forward election calendar feasible. And we got two great resolutions where we put a lot of minds together and worked that through. And of course, that's in addition to all the other prep work that we did for the nuts and bolts of the elections itself. So I want to thank everyone there. And I also want to thank especially, you know, when Ellen gave her statement earlier today in her committee report, she said, you know, quote, "We're going strong as always." And if there's anyone that really did, and I know we get a lot of messages, we get a lot of emails, people may have missed it, but this was really an unprecedented outreach effort this year compared to all years past. And I really just want to thank Ellen and everyone involved in communications for everything that they did. It's truly extraordinary. And so last week, here comes the report. And so as some of you may know or may not know, but at least the election committee folks are privy to this, we did not have the showing that we had hoped for. We have about a third of seats that are have candidates. I believe none of those are contested. We have actually, to be specific, four races that have one candidate each. We have a fifth candidate who emailed this morning that has been out on leave. They'll be granted an extension to require get their required signatures and attend the mandatory meeting to run for the BIPOC seat. But two-thirds of seats will be vacant going forward. And so we have to think a little bit, I don't know if this is the right forum or where or when, to think about what that means for us and how we address that going forward. I think, you know, with respect to, you know, some of the email that Hey had referenced, and I'll give a little bit of context to that here without going too long. When I wrote the summary to the Elections Committee with the updates, I was sending regular updates, two things became really apparent to me, anecdotally and through the conversations that I had with fellow staff members and the recruitment efforts and trying to encourage people. And the first is that, you know, we can do more as a body, I think, and we will need to do more as a collective body to really sell, advertise, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to call it, the role of the EA and the relevance to our staff body. There was I was surprised at the number of folks who have worked here for years, but just it wasn't something that they could articulate what it was or understand, let alone want to be a part of. And I think, you know, and empirically, we have 8,000-9,000 employees here. We typically have zero of those 8,000-9,000 employees joining our biweekly meetings. And so that does say something. That does signal something, in my opinion. And the second reality that I came to discover, and I think we can all collectively share this, is people are just burnt out. This has been a terrible, terrible year, right? People are overstretched, overasked, right? Compensating for extra work and you know, this is a reality that it's a truism. I don't need to beat that point to the ground, but that in itself can be looked at as a professional vacuum, and not even talk about the personal burdens that a lot of us carry, right? People have lost loved ones, the personal weight of and stressors that this pandemic has caused. And I think it was, and I think that, you know, absolutely played the role in asking people to make a major commitment to yet another thing in these unprecedented trying times. So those were kind of my observations, my insights, and my information to report back to the group. Sorry, it's a little bit longer than the normal, but we do have the mandatory candidate meetings tomorrow for the four or five folks that we do have registered, and then we can explore how to move forward collectively as a group. Thank you.
Thank you, Nasser. Are there any questions or comments?
I have comment sure. or question. Nasser, thank you for sharing all of that. I know I put this in the email thread, and again, I don't know if this is the right place to talk about this or if this would be another elections committee meeting, but it sounds like there's a candidate meeting tomorrow. But just to kind of exploring the possible option of, is there space in the timeline to extend the registration process for candidates? Is there, I still have some, I don't know what the right word is. I still have some inkling to believe that what I said in the email, reiterating that I do feel that the candidate or the signature requirement maybe some somewhat perceived barrier to entry relative to when we had a significant turnout last year with candidate registrations.
No, Kit, I thank you for bringing that. I completely, not only do I endorse what you're saying, I'll take it further. You know, some of those of you who are on the election committee may recall that was my personal view was that having a signature requirement was an impediment, a barrier to entry. But at the end of the day, the majority of folks on the committee who were active and voted, and I do sympathize with this. You don't have to necessarily agree with something to appreciate its merits. But at the end of the day, the opinion that won out was that, look, it's a de minimis requirement, especially because it's online this year, that it's literally just a matter of going and clicking buttons. And that should be a minimal threshold requirement for someone that we're asked to demonstrate, for someone we're asking to make a major commitment to by being a part of this elective body. That was the perspective that went out. I mean, another thing that was, you know, I didn't necessarily want at the beginning, but it persuaded at the end of the day was the mandatory candidate meeting. Those were historically in play, but weren't last year, the same way the signature candidate was not in play last year. But the same logic ultimately prevailed that, look, it's a 30-minute info session. Nasser's willing to do it three times throughout the day to accommodate various schedules, so we don't eliminate that barrier. But if people can't do that, that's going to be problematic. And secondary, one of the lessons that we learned from Jessica was really instrumental as the election chair last year, and really graceful in sharing her insight and guidance. One of the takeaways was, look, if you don't front end that information, then you're just going to have, as an election committee, dealing with thousands of emails on the back end. And so that was a secondary reason. So we can look at these things and we can say, are they barriers to entry, right? If I'm a new employee and I'm looking at this, oh crap, I don't want to have to do these things. But the countervailing reasons for doing them ultimately won the day, carried the day.
Thank you, Nasser. Wendy, I see your hand is raised.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to offer a point of information in that last year, since we did have to move the elections to virtual, the signature requirement was waived because it was an exception, kind of an exception. It was a little bit of a different process, but the signature requirement has always been in place with personal, you know, if there was in-person voting, there was a piece of paper. I actually remember signing petitions myself for employee assembly candidates at one point. And then also just, you know, as kind of a reference as well, the student assembly, their elections are going on as well. Actually, their deadline was on Monday and the employee assembly was yesterday. They have to gather at minimum three times the amount, so 75 signatures. Even a candidate that's running for president or vice president, they actually have to gather 300 signatures. So I know different size populations and whatnot, but even if someone is running for a college seat, they have to gather, depending on the college, either 75 or 100 signatures. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there as a point of reference.
Thank you. Claire, and then Kit.
Yeah, like as someone running for student assembly right now, I will agree that the signature requirement is, it can be a pretty big burden, especially like depending on your constituency. And also online, gathering signatures has been more difficult as you can only do it through social media and through email versus just going up to people in person normally and asking them to sign their petition. You know, signing into the NAC website can be kind of annoying sometimes. But obviously, I don't know how well this all translates to the employee assembly, but overall, from what I've heard, like, electronically gathering signatures for students as well has been more difficult than in person.
Thank you, Claire. Kit, and then Jackie. Kit?
I don't want to get too jumbled. I would second that. I do think the student assembly is this, I mean, they're different populations and the student assembly versus, basically they're different populations and the atmosphere or the vibe of the assemblies varies because of that. And I think for the employee assembly, this is part of what we do, or this to me, the employee assembly feels more built into the workday, where it's like the student assembly feels more like almost like, I don't want to say an extracurricular because I don't want to have that minimize the importance of the student assembly, but it seems like there's more out of class, like students have to be willing to work outside of class and what have you to be in the student assembly. Not that we can't do that in the employee assembly, but I don't know. It feels like there's theoretical flexibility to do that within the workday. And I would be curious, Wendy, if you had any, I don't know, any type of numbers, if there would be more, if you feel that the number of candidates, how they compare from year to year, and kind of going off of what Claire was saying as well, I think it's one thing to walk up to people in person and have them sign for petitioning and you have them, you know, you have their full attention right there because you're in their face versus like sending out an email and relying on that person to read it, open the link, sign in, do the clicks. Like we all take it as very simple and straightforward, but like the actual follow through is, there could be some, I think there might be some burden on that if people, see it, but they're not prioritizing it because other things are taking precedence.
Thank you, Kit. I'm going to move on to Jackie, then Gina. Jackie?
Hi. So I think this is a great issue to discuss further, but I was going to throw a suggestion out based on my experience with the EA. As many of you know, I started in the middle of a vacant seat. And then I found enough interest to join the EA and run for an election this past term. So I would think maybe, I'm not sure how successful we would be. I didn't respond to the email, but I did think that we might not get a strong increase in participation if we extended the deadline. So I was thinking maybe this time we would sort of cut our losses. I hate to say that, but I think it's also a conservation of energy that I'm thinking about. But what we might want to do is continue as EA members to speak to others and recruit and potentially just have people you know, fill in these seats that we have vacant now, offer them the opportunity so they can get an experience with what the EA is. And then hopefully next year, we'll have a much more robust election because people are able to, you know, decide or participate based on their experience in it. So that was just what I was going to suggest.
Thank you, Jackie. Gina, I saw your hand was up. Did you have anything to add? If not, we can move on to Brandon.
I was just going to sort of respond to Kit's question about data and metrics. We have, we certainly do. We have, we track all of the elections. It's, as we've sort of discussed anecdotally, in the past, there haven't been contested elections, so very few actual elections. But as Wendy noted, the threshold for doing gathering petition signatures has been there, you know, well for many, many years. So that's, it's not a new thing. I think the question of whether it was a factor in this year's election. I think there's data to be collected on that, and I think certainly as the elections committee moves forward with whatever, if there are any changes to the election rules, gathering that information would be very, very important, so that there is hard data or at least anecdotal response from community members, so that you can make a better plan moving forward.
I want to move on to Brandon.
Thank you. Hey. I sent this off to a few folks when the elections what came up, and the responses I got back from two different folks were just sort of like, sounds like a great idea. That seems like a lot to commit to, not just like the meetings, but like the term was kind of like, that seems daunting to commit to that. So I think something we may want to consider is, you know, the ability to either vocalize to folks that, you know, we ask for a certain term, but we are acknowledged that people have lives and that at times that may change. And or to Jackie's point, is there any opportunity to offer some shorter terms that allow folks the opportunity to join us to increase our membership, but not have someone feel as if, you know, I've got to join for 3 years. And if I back out, I look like a flake, you know, just something that we could to make that entry a little bit easier for folks, because it is a significant ask for someone to consider joining for years at a time. I think most people who enjoy it want to keep going at it, and that's going to happen. But sort of that barrier, trying to address that barrier to entry.
Thank you, Brandon. Any other comments or feedback? I think I just want to state that last year, when there was no signature requirement, we did have a lot of participation. We had an online election. There were contested seats. You know, we had votes from hundreds of different staff members. So I do wonder, I mean, when we have more people participate and then we get these contested elections, we're seeing a lot of staff members engaged in this process. So I just wonder if it's mandatory for us to have the signature requirement, if that's something we can do away with, so that we get more people to participate. And if we could, what would that look like? So maybe that's a question for Gina. I see Jessica's hand is raised and then Joe's hand is raised. So Jessica?
So I was just going to say, I'm not sure we publicized last year that we were not collecting signatures. I think it kind of just wasn't there. But I did want to say, I think, sorry, I have a headache. Nasser's report just now was really insightful. And I really do think this is an indication of everyone is burnt out. And just even thinking about doing one more thing some days is too much. So I really do think we should consider this an off year. I like Jackie's approach. I know I'm not on the elections committee, but those are my thoughts when it comes to that. I'll also say, I knew it was going to be a 3-year term. And yet when I looked at the seats, when I decided to run, I sat on it overnight because I was like, do I really want to commit to 3 years, even though I knew it was coming? So I do think that could also be a factor, but we did decide that last year. So I just wanted to share those thoughts.
Thank you, Jessica. Joe?
So ping-ponging off of your idea, Hey, could it be as simple as making a motion to waive the signature requirement while we're all still working remotely? We're soon to be heading back to campus, at least in a phased manner. It looks as if that's going to happen between now and the start of fall 21. Would that be a possibility to put a motion out on the floor and say, I know I move to forego the 25 signature requirement until such time as we're all working again together on campus?
Thank you.
Well, I move to evaluate whether or not the 25 signature requirement is still doing what it's intended to do. Has it outlived its usefulness? I don't know.
So I see several hands raised. So I'm going to allow Nasser, then Jackie, then Ellen. Nasser?
I'm trying to think about what the implications are for this, for us as a collective body fulfilling these things going forward. I want to make sure I have the opportunity to ask the question so I at least know who to be speaking with, if it's the body at large, if it's the executive committee, if it's a mixture of different folks. We'll leave today's meeting with 2/3 of seats vacant. Does this mean that we would be in a position to call this is unprecedented territory as far as I'm aware, would we be in a position to call a special election to run it back, to fill these seats, and to Joe's points, others' points, maybe in that, I'll argue both sides, maybe in that you say no signature requirements. The other side to that is, well, then what about, you know, we didn't do that the first time, is that fair balanced, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I just want to put this thought out there and pick better, brighter minds than mine on how we should be proceeding.
Thank you, Nasser. Jackie, then Ellen, then Gina.
I want to say I have very mixed feelings about the signatures, and another thought for a compromise would be, what if we allowed people to, contest, or I'm sure somebody can tell me the more technical term for this, if they don't get the minimum number of signatures, sort of contest that or submit an objection that they allowed to be they'd be allowed to run even if that minimum requirement was not met. Sorry, stumbling today. But basically, I think there's value in legitimizing a person's intention and efforts by having the signature requirement. But also, I don't want it to be a barrier. So if we were to say anyone who was very enthusiastic, interested, but was not able to maybe time or energy or whatever, to get those signatures, which I doubt would happen because I've signed many people's signatures just finding out that the petition was there. But if that is potentially perceived as a barrier and it stops people from participating, maybe we would mention that this is a sort of a requirement with an exception possibility.
Thank you, Jackie. Ellen, Gina, then Jackie.
Regarding the signatures, I think it's really not like a super important part. I would say it's more valid if we have a huge pool of candidates and someone got the signatures and someone didn't, to invalidate, you know, one of the candidates based on that would make more sense versus this small turnout that we had. But what I would say, I tend to agree with the initial reaction of Jackie of kind of just like cut our losses at this point, move forward with what we have. And in the fall with the new EA body, if we want to discuss talking about maybe having an interim election at that point, that's something that we can, address at that point. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Ellen. Gina, then Jackie.
Thank you. I was just going to respond to Nasser's question about special election, and it's sort of what Ellen just described. The EA can and certainly has called special elections. Usually it's in the fall or after the new election, the new assembly has been seated to fill the unfilled vacancies. And that's something that can be done. There can be an amendment to the election rules to either include or exclude parameters. And that might give the assembly and or elections committee some time to look into whether it was petition signatures or a three-year commitment or any of the other things that might be settling down after this year of COVID. So we can certainly do that. It would be difficult for the Office of the Assemblies to run another election right away before the end of the academic term. But if that was the will of the body, then we could we should have that discussion soon.
Thank you, Gina. Jamie, I saw your hand was raised.
Yeah, I was just going to, Ellen kind of hit what I was going to say, so I lowered my hand. But just that if we had like 20 people sign up and, you know, 15 of them didn't get signatures, I could see this being like an important thing to investigate. And you're right. I mean, maybe people just don't even sign up because they're scared of the 25 signatures. But I don't know that we have any good data on the signature being the thing that caused low participation in this year's election. And so I just don't know how much energy we really want to pour into like, should we, shouldn't we do this thing when maybe there's a lot of other factors at play. It's been an extraordinary year with crazy situations. I just don't know how much we want to invest in trying to solve what is a temporary situation with like great big overhaul changes. And maybe it was the three-year terms. Maybe, who knows? Pie on my face. But I hope it's not. I hope it's just standard burnout.
Thank you, Jamie. Andrea, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I'm running for the disability seat this year, and that I can tell you that from my perspective, I actually was doing it when I was on vacation last week, getting the signatures. That was not my anxiety of running again. That was the easy part of the whole process, in my opinion. I think maybe we didn't promote it as much because I think we assumed, similar to last year, when we had so many people interested in running, I think it's one of those things. So from my perspective, the getting of that was actually a pretty simple process. It's the time commitment associated with it. I didn't blink at 3 years because that's not a component that has been complicated for me, but I think that it may be some other factors with promotion and doing it. I just wanted to give my perspective as a person that actually went through that process of the signatures. And I don't think that's a contributing factor in my opinion.
Thank you, Andrea. Jackie?
Sorry, last time I'm going to jump in. A quick thought was that maybe if we plan it ahead enough, we could have a forum to, in advance of the elections, to invite people to come and ask questions about what it's like to run or what the EA does. And that informational session, we could really work on encouraging people to participate in the elections rather than sort of assuming that they'll be interested or try to get them to know what they're doing or signing up for in between the time that the elections are announced and the time that they have to, you know, petition to be a candidate. So just a thought.
Thank you, Jackie. Joe?
Yeah, I'm just reflecting on the fact that campus is still at COVID level yellow. This pandemic is not over. So if you look at what Wendy posted in the chat about the spring 2020 election reactivation
that point there about, you know, the fact that this is online, as well as trying to keep the protocols in place for everyone's safety, those are still realities. I don't think I can make a motion on this, but I think we need to consider that.
Thank you, Joe. Nasser, and I just want to remind everybody of the time. It's now 1:29. The meeting usually ends at 1:30. So we could make a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. So I will make that motion. Do I get a second? I see Nasser. Any dissent? Seeing none, we will extend this by 5 minutes. Nasser, you had your hand raised.
I just quickly want to just express the opinion that, you know, I agree in spirit with the idea of having more info sessions and these things. Two things empirically don't change. The reality is that we, even in the midst of the elections here, we have eight and with peak advertisement and unprecedented advertisements announcing about the EA and upcoming, of our 8,000 or so employees, I believe we have zero guests or one guest on this call. Okay, that's an empirical data number that does reflect interest and involvement to some degree. And the second thing is, you know, many of us who are on this call are still on the call right now were involved in many, many, many discussions with CNGs and personal outreach to our professional networks and colleagues here. Across the spectrum for all seats, my conclusion is it's what we've said. It's just burnout in the times that we're in. And so to make another ask to invite someone to come to an info session to learn more about what we've, to me, I just don't see the utility in that. And so I just, to the extent there's any role to speak on behalf of, I just want to put that forward.
Thank you, Nasser. Any other comments, questions? Ellen?
Yeah, going back to the very beginning of Nasser's report, where he said in speaking with people that they still didn't necessarily have an understanding of what EA's role is or what EA does or what the purpose of EA is, as we are always inviting people to come and talk to EA and to explain to EA and to teach EA about different groups on campus or different departments or different things that are happening, maybe the employee assembly should work in the coming year on creating a presentation that we can go and travel around to other groups to present about the EA and say, listen, this is the EA, this is what we do, we're here for you. And that way, you know, because I think that we did do a lot of outreach this year with the EA forums that we held. That was completely new. That's something that we hadn't done previously. But if we still need to get that message out there, there maybe that's another way.
Thank you, Ellen. Any other feedback? Seeing none, I guess we will close out the committee reports and move on to open discussion. In the final 3 minutes, does anybody have anything they want to bring to the table, anything they want to discuss? Ashley, your hand is raised.
Just a selfish plug, I apologize. The President's Awards for Employee Excellence is in its nomination cycle. I would really appreciate if you could spread the word to your constituent groups. The nominations are open until August 31st, trying to be conscious of just people's work cycles. So it does have a long opening. And Bring a Child to Work Day, also renamed Cornell Kids at Home, is launching next week on April 12th. So that's a great thing to share with your constituents as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. Jackie?
Hey, I lied. Not the last time I raised my hand, but I have had some issues with communication to my constituents at the college, and I recently noticed that there were some EA announcements in the employee well-being newsletter. I was wondering if that was something that we did or we had any influence on that, or maybe I'm wondering if my some of the people here in my college added those notes, because I've been sort of prompting people to put that information out. So I was wondering if anybody knew anything.
So Michelle Artaby runs the Cornell Wellbeing newsletter, and I am in constant communication with her back and forth with sharing things. So she will contact me about things to put in our newsletter, and I will contact with her things to put in her newsletter. So those did come from communications, from EA communications.
Good to know. Thanks.
And I mean, if there's any other ideas that people have of places that we can spread the word and get news out there, like, please let me know. I'm happy to be in touch with other people that run different newsletters, different websites, different communication channels. So always let me know.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? It is now 1:34. I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting now at 1:34 if there's nothing else people want to discuss. Joe, your hand is raised.
I'll second your motion.
Thank you. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, I'm going to adjourn this meeting. I want to thank you all for sticking with us to the very end. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.